Chapter 24. The second happy hour in the Dollar Bar was a repeat of the first Gabfest. The vacuous chit-chat around the table ground on Gamay's nerves, but she had to admit that the Gibson was perfect and that the dinner that followed was superb, featuring freshly caught shrimp in a savory jambalaya. Mayhew waited politely until dessert was served before he made his announcement. "Dooley will pick you up promptly at 9:15 tomorrow morning," he said. "You can leave right after breakfast. It's been a pleasure to have you as our guest, Dr. Trout. We'll be sad to see you go." Mayhew's broad grin seemed at odds with his dismay over Gamay's impending departure. She wondered how long he would maintain his smiley face if she insisted on staying another night. "And I will be sad to leave," Gamay said, in a performance worthy of Ethel Barrymore. "Thank you for having me, and allowing me to see the wonderful work that you and your staff are doing here in this slice of paradise." Mayhew was too caught up in the moment to pick up on her veiled sarcasm. At his suggestion, they moved out onto the patio for a nightcap and to watch the sunset. The scientists gathered in knots, keeping their voices low. Occasionally, Gamay heard a scientific term spoken, suggesting they were talking among themselves about their research. By 9 o'clock, all the staff people had gone to their cabins, leaving Gamay alone. She waited another half hour until everyone had settled in, then followed the shell path to Song Lee's cabin. The windows were dark. Gamay climbed onto the small porch and knocked softly at first, then harder. There was no answer. She was surprised to find the door unlocked. She went inside and switched on the lights. It only took a few seconds to see that the cabin was unoccupied. There was no sign that Lee had eaten dinner alone there. Gamay switched the lights off and hurried along the path to the waterfront. Lee's kayak was not in the boat shed. Gamay pondered what she should do. She could wake up Dr. Mayhew and the rest of the staff, but given the penchant for oyster-like secrecy on the island, it was likely she'd be cut out of the action. Impulsively, Gamay lifted the second kayak from its rack and set it on the beach. Then she had another thought and dashed back to the boathouse to grab Dooley's night vision goggles. She slipped them over her head, shoved the kayak in the water, got in, and paddled furiously. She followed the perimeter of the island and headed out into the bay. The stranded cabin cruiser was greenish and grainy through the goggles. She paddled directly to it to get her bearings, then turned into the funnel-shaped cove Dooley had shown her earlier that day. The mangroves squeezed in on both sides. At the narrowest part of the cove, she found the post that marked the break in the mangroves. She paddled to shore, got out of the kayak, and was pulling it up onto the beach when she stumbled over Song Lee's rucksack, which was lying in the sand. Gamay glanced around and saw something gleaming in the grass. It was Lee's kayak. Gamay struck off inland, following the winding path through the thicket of trees, carrying her wooden kayak paddle in one hand. The path emerged from the trees into the open, meandering through cactus and scrub. The whisper of the waves washing the beach provided a backdrop to the insect chorus. With the aid of the night vision goggles, Gamay moved quickly along the path. She paused where it broke out onto the beach and looked around. Two sets of footprints led off down the beach. Taking up the hunt like a hound on a scent, she followed the prints around a bend. She was trotting now, slowing only when she saw a yellow glow in the distance. There was a house up ahead, partially hidden by trees and bushes. She moved closer and saw that the light was spilling through a screen door and window. She crept up to the house and put her back to the wall a few feet from the window. She could hear a man and a woman speaking excitedly in Chinese, their voices starting out low and then getting louder. The man now sounded angry, the woman hysterical. Gamay edged up to the window, pushed the goggles up on her forehead, and peered through the glass panes at a sparsely furnished room illuminated with gas camp lanterns. Song Lee was sitting at a kitchen table across from a brutish-looking Asian man who was dressed in shorts and T-shirt. An automatic weapon lay on the counter next to the stove. The man had apparently just run through his reserve of patience. He brought his hand back and slapped Lee across the face. The blow knocked her off her chair to the floor. The man turned away from Lee to get his weapon, a big mistake on his part. She got to her knees and plucked a steak knife from a rack that was within arm's reach. There was a flash of blade as she plunged it into the man's thigh, then pulled it free. Letting out a scream of pain, he dropped the gun to the floor and grabbed his bleeding leg. Lee stood up and dashed for the door. Bellowing with rage, the man lunged after her, but she was too quick for him. She burst through the screen door and ran down the beach. The man picked his gun up off the floor and limped to the door. Standing in the doorway, he shouted in Chinese, then raised the gun up to shoulder level. Gamay stepped from the shadows just then, raised the kayak paddle high, and brought it down on the man's head with all her strength. The handle snapped like a dry twig, and the man crashed to the ground, falling on top of his gun. Gamay hoped the blow had knocked him out, but he soon groaned and began to stir. She pulled the goggles down and sprinted along the beach. Seeing a figure running 100 feet or so ahead, she called out Song Lee's name. The scientist stopped and wheeled around to face her pursuer. She clutched the steak knife defensively in her hand. Gamay ripped the goggles from her head.
"It's me, Dr. Trout."
"Doctor, what are you doing here?"
"I followed you."
Gamay glanced back toward the house.
"No time to talk," she said. "I slowed your friend down only for a second."
Gamay tossed away the useless paddle, and then she and Lee ran along the beach. In their haste, they missed the path that would take them across the island and had to go back, costing time. But Gamay took the lead, and within minutes they were on the other side of the island. She had Lee give her a hand getting the kayak out of the grass. There was a soft footfall on the path, and seconds later a figure burst from the bushes. The man who had held Song Lee prisoner flicked on a flashlight and snarled in triumph. He was surprised to see Gamay, but only for an instant, and quickly swung his light and gun around and brought them to bear on her midsection for an easy gut shot. Gamay put her head down and charged like a bull, butting the man in the stomach. He had abdominal muscles like a stone wall. He brought down the gun's stock on her head and a blow hard enough to knock her to the ground. Through a gray haze, she punched his wounded leg and heard him scream in pain. Lee leaped onto the man's back, clinging to him, but he shook her off and she fell to the ground. He stood there unmoving, staring at her. Then the gun dropped from his hand and he crumpled to the ground as if all the air had gone out of him. The beam from his flashlight fell on the wooden handle of the steak knife, protruding from his chest. As Gamay helped Lee to her feet, Lee gazed at her deadly handiwork.
"I've never done anything like that," she said. "Never."
"You'll get used to it," Gamay said. "Who is he?"
"I don't know. He came up while I was getting my kayak and struck me with his gun. He said he's been watching me, and that others were coming in a boat to take me away."
Gamay suddenly put her hand on Lee's arm.
"Listen," she said.
Excited voices talking in Chinese could be heard coming along the path. The others had arrived. Lee's kayak was righted and dragged to the water. She produced a spare plastic and aluminum paddle for Gamay to use. They both shoved their kayaks off the beach and paddled madly. They were about 100 feet from the mangroves when flashlight beams probed the water around them. The shafts of light reflected off the shiny fiberglass hulls. Gamay told Lee to hug the shore where they'd make a more difficult target. She tensed, expecting gunfire, but the lights blinked out.
"They are going back to their boat," Lee said. "They will come around the other end of the island and intercept us."
"How long before they get there?" Gamay asked, without breaking the rhythm of her strokes.
5, 10 minutes, maybe? What should we do?"
"Paddle as if our lives depended on it, because they do." They put their backs into each stroke and made it out of the cove, but the sound of a boat engine soon shattered the quiet of the night. A spotlight moved slowly back and forth across the water. There was no place along the shore where they could put in and hide. Thick, gnarly roots extended out from mangroves, forming a formidable barrier. A silhouette loomed ahead. They were coming up on the grounded cabin cruiser. Gamay paddled toward the old boat with Lee right behind. They climbed aboard the derelict, pulling their kayaks up behind them, and lay face down on the rotting deck. Through cracks in the hull, they saw the spotlight go past the cruiser. For a second, Gamay entertained a flash of optimism, but that faded as the search boat changed direction, circled the wreck, and came closer. The spotlight filtered through the cracks and fell on their faces. The women's pursuers peppered the cabin cruiser with gunfire, starting with the elevated bow and working back toward the stern. They took their time, pumping round after round into the pilot house. Splinters showered the two women. Gamay covered her head with her hands and cursed her own stupidity. The only thing they had accomplished by climbing on the old boat was to give these bozos some target practice. It would only be a matter of seconds before the bullets found them. Then, the firing stopped. Gamay expected the attackers to swarm aboard, but instead, a bottle filled with flaming gasoline arced through the air and landed on the deck. Crackling fire from the Molotov cocktail spread in a blazing puddle that lapped at their feet. The heat became unbearable. The two women stood up, preferring to be shot rather than be burned to death. But the boat carrying their assailants was moving away from them and picking up speed. By then, the cabin cruiser had become a blazing torch. "Jump!" Gamay yelled. They dove into the water and swam away from the burning wreck. They struck out for the nearest mangrove and had only gone a short distance before they heard a boat engine again and saw a spotlight coming their way. Gamay's hopes were dashed. The shooters were coming back to finish them off. The boat slowed and the spotlight played over the water, finally finding the pair of swimmers. Gamay expected that the rattle of gunfire would be the last thing she would ever hear, but instead, a familiar voice rang out.
"Gamay," Paul Trout called. "Is that you?"
She stopped swimming and began to tread water. She stuck a hand in the air. The boat edged closer, looming over them, and she looked up to see Paul Trout's long arms reaching down to pull her to safety.